Good morning, Tom. How are you?
Nice to talk to you guys. Good morning.
Good to talk to you. Hey, for you personally, not your teammates, but you personally, Tom, is the bye week all about recharging mentally or healing up physically? And I'm talking about this bye week this year.
Probably more mentally than anything. My body's feeling great.
Mm-hmm.
My body's feeling, I haven't sacked much this year. I haven't taken many hits. My arm feels great, so I'm feeling really good physically, and I'm excited to get back to work. I think that's, watching the games yesterday, you're glad you're resting in a sense, but in another sense, you wish you were out there playing.
Yeah.
So, especially watching a Miami Jet game, you get anxious to be back on the field.
Hey, since it is the bye week, with your permission, we like to leave the beaten path a little bit and maybe talk about some non-football items. And if at any point we venture into something you're not comfortable with, you can just tell us to shut up and we'll move on. But as a jumping off point, do your teammates discuss among themselves and with you their plans for the bye week? As an example, does Logan Mankins invite you to go like wild boar hunting with him with a bow and arrow? Or Wes Welker say, come on, Tom, we're going to go bungee jumping? Or do you guys just don't say anything and you go your separate ways?
Yeah, everyone has kind of special plans for the week. It's for most of our lives, we probably since high school, we haven't had any time off in the fall. So your bye week, whether it was college or obviously now in our pro career, is it's the one weekend that you kind of plan for at the beginning of the season to say, okay, this is what we're going to do. So, everyone talks about it, and everyone's always concerned with the bye week schedule so you can plan the special occasion that you have planned.
So tell us, what did you do, Tom?
My wife and I went on vacation to Florida and spent some time together that we haven't had in a while. So it's kind of we never really had a honeymoon, so it's kind of our honeymoon.
So did you
you chose that over wild boar hunting with Logan Mankins? What are you, nuts?
That was light. Wild boar hunting was light.
That's true. So let me get this straight. You're on your honeymoon and you're watching the Jets Dolphins?
I love watching the games on Sunday. I mean, like I said, we don't have too many times to do that. So
does she watch too? Does she watch with you?
Yeah, she always does.
Really?
She always does.
Does she understand the game and all the nuances, and she know what she's watching?
Yeah, she didn't watch much of it before. Obviously before we met, but she knows Dwight Freeney and Reggie Wayne and. she knows Joseph Addai, and she questions every transaction that's made by our team. So she's like most of the Patriot fans now. She's got a big opinion on everything.
Two-part question: could you relate in any way, shape, or form to what Brett Favre dealt with successfully yesterday? And who were you guys rooting for sitting on the couch? Were you rooting for or against Favre to be successful in that situation?
A lot's been made of him over the last few years, and I think it's interesting as a quarterback, there's not many quarterbacks that retire just to retire. Most quarterbacks, whether it's Reno or Elway or Young or Montana, they're retiring because, you get hurt or you physically can't do it. So I think when I've seen Brett Favre, and I heard him in one of his press conferences, said, I still know I can play, I just not sure I want to do it anymore. I immediately thought, well, he's coming back, just because, quarterback, you don't take that physical beating that so many of the other positions take.
Mm-hmm.
Line up for practice and pads every day and hit hit the guy standing across from you. We get to, it's like going to play catch in the backyard. So, we go out there and, you see the look on guys' faces when on a Wednesday when they come in and on the practice schedule it says full pads, And for the quarterback, it's like, who gives? No one really cares because the quarterbacks don't care because we never get hit in practice anyway. So, I think he's been a great player in this league, a great example of a professional athlete and how to overcome a lot of obstacles. obstacles in your career. He's extremely mentally tough. I mean, his streak of playing is unbelievable. So he's meant a lot to the league. And, you know, to go back to Lambeau yesterday, which has its own traditions, it was a pretty special thing to watch. And he always seems to rise to the occasion. I mean, he's always aware it's a Monday night game, or I always remember the game when his father passed away and he came out and threw all those touchdowns against Oakland. I mean, he's really that kind of player. And those special players don't come along so often. And I think, you know, Green Bay had him for a long time. And you know, now he's playing for a great team in Minnesota.
Hey, we see every week why he came back, Tom, obviously. Having Adrian Peterson behind you and that line in front of you and that defense. I mean, he came back because it's a pretty good situation. He's got a good chance to go to the Super Bowl, win it all. Boomer Esiason told us the one thing that bothered him, he understands why he came back, skipping training camp, skipping two-a-days, just kind of flying and dropping in when all the real hard work was over. Did that bother you, too? You're a big team guy. You don't want to ever put yourself above everyone else. Did it bother you when Favre did that?
No, you know, it doesn't. And the reason is there's a lot of guys who would love to do that, and a lot of guys do that. And a lot of the veteran free agents don't sign with teams until, you know, 2 or 3 weeks into training camp. You know, whether it's, you know, Ty Law's in that situation, or, you know, a guy like Junior Seau, you know. I mean, it's your body only does it so much, and training camp is to get ready for the football season. And Brett, for as long as he's played, he obviously was ready for the football season when he started. So, you know, he just got more attention doing it than any other unrestricted free agent. And that's really what he was. He was an unrestricted free agent that was not under contract by anybody. That why does he need to make a decision in April or May? You know, I mean, if he wants to wait, so be it. And it's up to the team to decide whether they want to sign you, but that's really the right of the player.
Tom, over the years, we've had conversations about you and, you know, wide receiver du jour and how difficult the system is, how much they have to learn, how you guys need to start thinking on the same page, you know, whether it's Gaffney or Moss or Welker or Washington or Stallworth, whatever the case may be. And I don't know if you heard Troy Aikman's comments yesterday about Brett Favre and being on the same page so quickly with Harvin and Rice, but he said Brett plays it differently. It's not so much about being on the same page and knowing exactly what the other one is thinking. Brett says, get open, and I'll somehow get the ball to you. Does that seem logical or even possible in the National Football League to play it differently than I would guess 31 other quarterbacks might play it in this league?
Well, I think that may be part of it. I mean, I think, you know, he's got a great benefit being in the same system that he's been in for pretty much his entire career, except for those years with the Jets. The West Coast offense is built on, you know, it's a timing offense. There's not a lot of, from what I understand, I've never played quarterback in it, but there's not a lot of route conversions by receivers. You know, they kind of tell the receivers what to run, and they're supposed to run as fast as they can to that particular spot. And then it's up to the quarterback just to make the read. And if they bring too many guys that you can't block, then you just throw it to the one short receiver that you have on the play. So, you know, I think a lot of that getting on the same page with receivers, like let's say Reggie Wayne or Marvin Harrison and Peyton Manning over the years, that's a very different offense.
Right.
That, you know, it's built on anticipation of how the receiver is going to come out of a particular break on a route versus certain coverage. And both obviously are very successful, and there's a lot of teams in the league, there are many different ways to play offense, there are many different ways to play defense, and both have their strengths and weaknesses. So it's just a matter of the skill set of the players and how they fit into that overall scheme. And sometimes it looks very coordinated, sometimes it doesn't. That's why a guy could be on a particular team and not do very well, let's say a receiver in the Colts offense and then go to a West Coast offense. And then now all of a sudden he's this great player, or vice versa.
Hey, Tom, back to the off-the-field stuff. When you and your wife go on vacation, my guess is a little different than when most of us go on vacation. But when it's time for dinner, is there an internal debate here as to whether you guys want to order takeout, go to Wendy's drive-thru, or deal with the paparazzi and TMZ by going to Prime 112? How does that process work, if you don't mind?
You know, we don't go out much. And we were down there for 3 days, and that was the one night we went out. So, you know, it's just kind of what it is. And obviously, I mean, you pick a restaurant where, you know, there's going to be those people out there, but it's really a great restaurant. I mean, if anybody's ever been there, it's probably one of my favorite restaurants. So, you know, you just deal with it and you know, you enjoy your time out. And I had some friends that I've been friends with for a long time that came with us to dinner that I got a chance to catch up with. So it was a fun night.
Does the restaurant know you're coming and put like security guards around and have people killed if they try to come up to you? Or do you kind of sneak in unannounced and just hopefully that they let you alone?
No, it's actually a pretty cool restaurant, you know, like that. It's, you know, they have their fair share of athletes down there, and a lot of, you know, high-profile people live down in Miami, and you know, the owner of the restaurant's pretty good friends with Pepper Johnson.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, Pep goes down there a lot too. So we always it's a great restaurant, and if you guys haven't been there.
No,
can you get us in?
I was thinking Wendy's drive-thru, but that's just me.
We can do both. We can do both. Hey, I'm looking at I'm sitting there online and looking at the restaurant bill. That, you know, that Russian billionaire who's buying the New Jersey Nets?
Oh, yeah, yeah. The guy with the big boats, the ships.
So he goes to a restaurant and he spends $52,000 with tip on lunch. And somebody immediately takes the bill, and it's called Melo's, M-E-L-L-O in New York.
Uh-huh.
They send the bill to TMZ. So they have the whole bill and every item they bought and every drink they had, the price, the tip, and everything. Do you worry about that when you go to lunch or go to dinner, that I better be careful here because this waiter, this hostess, this person at the next table is going to see what I ate, call the inside track, call TMZ? Is it that kind of constant
vigilance
that you have to live with, Tom?
I don't put a whole lot of thought into that. I don't. It was funny. I remember, like, in 2000, I was here with Drew, and he was telling me that, you know, he went to a restaurant at Walpole at one point, and then the next day, you know, they told him in the newspaper, it was written what they all ordered and stuff. He's like, I'm never going back there, you know. And now, you know, 10 years later, how different our society is, where, you know, that all seems to be so important, and there's so many outlets for that.
Yeah.
People are really interested, and things have changed a lot in the last 10 years for everybody. And I think it's just kind of the society. And the reality is, and how I always approach it, is the next day there's going to be another story. You know, I really don't have anything to hide. And I just, you know, you always try to go out there and, you know, be respectful of people and do your best. And, you know, however people want to treat you, that's one thing. How you react to it's another. And I just assume, enjoy the experience for what it is and for what you get out of it. And then, you know, whatever comes of it. But I think you can get really, you know, if you're trying to please too many people all the time, it would be so cute. I mean, then it's just really self-defeating, and you don't get anything out of it, just except a bunch of stress and anxiety. And that's not what you're going out for.
Which leads me perfectly to my next question. If there is some obnoxious individual or individuals bothering you during dinner, who's more likely to fling their mashed potatoes at a TMZ camera person or just an autograph, you know, yeah, hound? Would that be you or your wife just going to tell somebody to screw and get out of here?
probably her, man. She's got that Brazilian passion.
Yeah,
soccer fan. So she's all bark and no bite. So she's pretty feisty when she really wants to be. But she's it's definitely her.
What if they do, and you're in the middle of a meal? Can you sign this? What do you do?
I just assume sign it.
Yeah.
You know. I think it takes more energy to explain yourself, and, you know, it's an autograph, and, you know, I'd sign the autograph and then go. And sometimes, you know, when you're really not in the mood, or, you know, then you just politely decline, but it doesn't happen too often.
You know what Tiger Woods does?
It's a big part of it. You know, you think about all those times where you're, you know, this one experience that this person is going to have with you is going to shape their, you know, their opinion of you.
Right.
It's pretty ridiculous to think whether you sign or you don't sign, or whether you smile or you don't smile, or, you know, you hold a conversation or you don't, that this is how this person is going to, but that's just the way it is. And I think that's, like I said, I'm not the only person to deal with them. There's thousands of people that deal with it. And you know, you just, like I said, I always feel you just do the best you can do. and that's good enough for me.
I'm not sure this would apply in your case, but from like the parking lot of the country club to the tee, to the golf course, and back to the parking lot, Tiger Woods has Stevie Williams who tells people, you know, sit down, shut up, be quiet, get away, whatever. He's sort of the bad cop. Would that apply for you in any way, Tom? I mean, do you ever, like when you go out to dinner, do you ever take friends with you and they sort of know that it's expected if somebody's obnoxious, they stand up and say,
haven't
listen.
Haven't you seen the Visa commercial? He has all his linemen with him.
That's true. Yeah. Can you come back later or maybe after? Just leave him alone right now. That way you're not the bad guy. Your friend that they don't know is.
Yeah, I mean, I think I've learned some tricks that work for me. And I think for a guy like Tigers, that would be very tough. I mean, it's like Michael Jordan, everywhere you go, you're never going to fit in anywhere. And Tiger, I mean, I think it's one thing at the course where, you know, he's to go there to do a job. I mean, I couldn't imagine running out there for pregame warm-ups and then stopping to sign autographs or going in at halftime of a football game and stopping there at section, you know, 110 and signing 10 autographs before we walk in, which that's what he has to deal with.
Right.
I mean, you're trying to, like, get ready to play. And which amazes me, like a guy like Mickelson that can do that.
Yeah.
And smile. I mean, I'm just sitting there thinking, like, well, I mean, I'm much more like Tiger in that sense. When it's time to play, it's time to play.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, now if you're going out to, you know, if you're sitting in the hotel lobby, you know, then I understand. Okay, people are going to come up to you, and then, you know, you sign the autographs. But you know, that's everyone has a different take on it. Some people can deal with those, you know, those different type of. Not distractions, just experiences differently. And, you know, those are two very different examples, but both are obviously very successful in what they do.
We've talked to celebrities, athletes in the past who have rules, you know, the hard rules where you say, I'm not going to get my photograph taken with a drink or a beer in my hand, never take your shirt off in public. Alex Rodriguez did that in Central Park.
No pictures of my kids.
Yeah, my kids out of can't be. What rules do you have, Tom? Do you have any hard and fast rules?
You know, not really. I usually don't take a lot of pictures. You know, I've seen that, and, you know, and then, you know, show up on Christmas cards, and I don't know, I just think that's
really
pictures back in the day, like, that was different, you know, you go to the, you know, they take a picture, and then they go get a print of it, and, you know, then, great, they have a picture, and that sits at their office desk. Well, now it's like, you know, you're on ESPN.com, so I think what I've realized is you have to build whatever wall you want for your own privacy around yourself, because if you allow everyone else to determine, you know, what the privacy means to you, or then it gets tough. But if you just say, okay, well, and it's probably all case by case. I mean, it's like sometimes I'll go to the movie theater on the Boston Common. It's happened a few times, and you know, there's a lot of sports teams that will play in Boston and stay at, like, I don't know if that's the Ritz over there.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's the Ritz. You know, but there's like 10 or 12 guys sitting out there with autographs waiting for all those players to come out. So those guys all come up and say, oh, Tom, can I sign this? You know, and I think at that time, you know, you know they're not really out there for their son or for their daughter. You know, they're out there to probably say. So I think then you feel it's a lot easier to say, you know, sorry, you know, I'll pass, or you know, you kind of want everyone to go through the same channel, which I always want everyone to send everything to the stadium, because that's the easiest for me. So, but then, you know, like one guy who's been out there a few times ago, but you told me that the last time. You know, you never said it. And it's like, oh, come on, man.
Just,
you know,
call him a loser. He'll get lost.
Hey, talking about pictures showing up on greeting cards, I got some bad news for you. I've acquired that video of you and your skivvies at the scouting report. It's going to be on my Christmas video reel, Tom.
I got it as a fathead on my wall at home.
Oh, no. That's right. I'm still pissed there should be confidentiality agreements you sign.
There should be, yeah. Hey, you've been a good sport about talking about the off-the-field stuff, so I'm going to push the envelope just a little bit, and you can tell me to screw if you like.
What do you do?
No, are you okay with your wife being a helicopter pilot?
You know, she's done everything. I mean, I kind of joke about it, but, you know, she's been scuba diving with sharks and, You know, she's done, you know, when they run on side of a mountain and rappelling down the mountain. And she does, she tries everything, man. She does kung fu. She does boxing. I mean, she's, it's just how she is. So.
But she's flying for two now, though.
I know. And from all indications, I know a few people are helicopter pilots. One of my great friends is one. And, you know, it's all about safety. So. I mean, I've flown in helicopters, and I really enjoy the experience as long as it's very safe. So she assures me it's very safe, and I guess I just have to go with it. But, you know, there's only some things I'm definitely not going to win, and that's one of them.
And you're ready to get in with just the two of you and, like, go to New York? Would it be that easy?
I don't know. I don't. That hasn't come up yet. I don't know. I don't feel quite safe with that. I think we'd always like to have somebody who's had – whatever, thousands of hours, you know, that's probably what makes me feel most comfortable.
Wow. Hey, it's an she does,
yeah,
this.
That's solo flight.
Yeah.
I don't think solo flight's good for anybody. Anyone's a helicopter, and I'm sure there's probably some helicopter pilots think I'm crazy, but
you know what you mean?
You know, I mean, there's a lot of things that can happen up there to one person.
Well, the other thing is you don't want to piss her off and get in an argument before you get on the helicopter.
That's true.
If it's a solo flight, she could scare the hell out of you. You know?
Have you ever seen one of those AC-30 gunships? Because you've been known to shoot at paparazzi in the past. You can arm that sucker.
That's right. We'll start tracking them down.
Hey, you know, we get asked this question all the time, and we've asked you in the past, and I don't know if your answer changes as the years go on, but how much longer are you going to do this? You look at Favre, he's 40, he's playing well, he's having a blast. Do you see yourself doing it at 40 or 41 or 42? How much longer can you keep this up?
Yeah, well, I mean, I feel like at 30, I guess I'm 31 now. No, I'm 32.
I thought you were 32.
Yeah, I'm 32. You know, I feel like, you know, the best I've ever felt. And so a quarterback typically, which I said, you know, guys retire for injury at the quarterback position. And a lot of other positions, they retire because they can't run anymore. You know, and that's what the game comes down to for 90% of the other players. And for a quarterback, running, it's not an issue. I mean, I was slow to start, and I'm slower now, and I'll be slower 10 years from now. But so is Favre, and so is Peyton Manning. And, you know, all these guys, no one can run. No quarterbacks can run. Marino couldn't run. Elway couldn't run as he got older. Steve Young became more of a in-the-pocket passer as he got older. Montana was – so, you know, what the quarterback needs to do is be able to direct the offense and lead and use their use their experiences and their intelligence to get the ball to the guys who can do something with it, which is usually not the quarterback. So it's about throwing the football for a quarterback when it comes right down to it. And the reason why Favre's still playing, why Vinny Testaverde played, and why Flutie was playing, and why Warren Moon was playing was because they could throw the ball. Mm. So assuming, you know, my arm feels great, there's not a whole lot of other things that are going to keep me from wanting to be out there and wanting to play. And, you know, like I said, five, 6 years ago, my arm would hurt every day throwing the football.
Really?
And I always used to think, man, how can I play and always have my arm hurting? And, you know, now my arm never hurts. So, you know, like I said, I've gotten into it. I really understand my arm, and it's something that every quarterback should learn. You know, and I know how many throws I can make. I know how to get it in shape for the season. I know how to maintain it during the season. You know, even when a guy like Haynesworth falls on my shoulder, you know. I mean, that could have been pretty significant. But, you know, because I think my arm is really flexible and it's very loose in a good way, you know, it's able to withstand those type of things. So hopefully that's the way it always is. And if that's the case, then I'll just keep playing until I –
so you can't
with my Social Security, if we have that left here, 30 years.
But you've said before, I've heard you discuss this on kind of a existential level of, you know, what does it all mean? You know, this football, why is this so meaningful, what you do, throw a football? And it sounds like you have other things you want to do with your life. It sounds like you're one of those kind of guys sometimes. Do you ever wonder that? if you've, you know, if it matters, this sport you play. I ask golfers that too. I asked Faxon that the other day. You hit a little white ball and try to get it in the hole, and that's all you do with your life. I know you make a lot of money, but doesn't it seem kind of pointless?
Yeah, and it does. And there's no, I mean, when you think about the way that people view, you know, us in society, you know, it doesn't match up. And I think I see people I think some of the experience I've had, whether it's going to Africa, you know, 2 years ago, like I did, and understanding my sister teaches special needs kids. And I mean, you talk about people that affect people on a daily basis or doctors or, you know, around the world, that it takes some special things in you to be able to do that. And I think, you know, we are, as athletes, we are incredibly spoiled. I mean, we're just, you know, I was watching this thing on like the E60 on ESPN, and they were showing Albert Haynesworth.
Yes.
And he's driving around in a boat that goes, you know,
150.
275 miles an hour or whatever.
And the rock climbing Jeep.
Yeah, that can go on the moon or, you know, and then, you know, we hear athletes go, well, I'm just trying to feed my family. And it doesn't, that to me, it really bothers me. You know, because, you know, there's a lot of people in society that are working their tail off every day to make $30,000 a year.
Mm-hmm.
And so that I don't lose track of that. And I think I'm very blessed to play football and do something that I really love, because it does, you know, I enjoy it obviously for the sport, but because it does challenge us physically and emotionally and mentally. And there's a lot of, like you say, existential things that come of it that, you know, that could be football or it could be some other thing. You know, for me, it happens to be football because, you know, I was blessed with a great arm, pretty much. And I don't take it very seriously. And, you know, I have a mom and dad who, you know, who I look up to, who are my role models. And my mother is, you know, she's a saint to me. And my father is, you know, the greatest man I've ever known. So, you know, I think they really, you know, they're the people that instilled a work ethic and a family and all these other things that to me are far more important than throwing a football. So when the day comes where I'm not able to do that, I'll definitely need something else to kind of satisfy that competitive craving that I have. And who knows what it'll be. Like I said, there's nothing that really interests me that much right now, you know, other than throwing the football around. So when that day comes, I'm sure there'll be something, because I'm not a person that sits around at all. I like to do everything, so I won't be flying helicopters. That's
all right, quick follow-up, and maybe you answered this question by talking about your upbringing, and it's a follow-up to that money situation. You know, obviously you and your wife's combined income have enough money you can buy anything you'd ever want, never see, and not even know that you had spent the money on it. What keeps you from doing what we read about Antoine Walker? Two Bentleys, two Mercedes, two Rolls Royce, you know, $15,000 poker hands with Michael Jordan, you know, 10 bedroom houses with indoor basketball courts and all this sort of stuff. What keeps you from just saying, I'm going to go on a shopping spree like Michael Jackson and buy all this junk?
Yeah. Well, I think everyone's brought up differently, and like I said, I think a lot of it is the way I grew up in my dad was, you know, worked, you know, he was first one out obviously he was out the door before we woke up most of the days, and then he was at home after we were, you know, getting ready for dinner time, and he worked extremely hard to provide for, you know, his four children, and he, you know, they did everything they could for us. And I just, you know, money is obviously a very, you know, it drives our society, and, you know, a lot of it has to do with, you know, just being responsible. I know people that make $70,000 a year that don't have money problems, and I know athletes who make $4 million a year that have serious money problems.
Right, right.
So it's really about, it's not how much you make, it's how much you spend, and I think financial planning, which is something that I wish we learned more about in elementary school and high school, and, you know, social studies is important, but so is, you know, learning to budget your money and save and set aside money for your children for college or whatever needs you may have. And, you know, financial stress is, I know, you know, that's tough on everybody. So I don't wish that on anybody. And you just try to make good decisions. That, I think that's what it comes down to.
Terry Francesconi wants to know, Tom, what team do you feel knows you the best and gives you the hardest time defensively?
Wow, that's a great question. And I think the team that I've probably struggled against the most in my career is Miami.
Mm-hmm.
And they've been the toughest team on me and on our offense and our passing game over the years. And, like I said before, those teams that rush four and can still play those split safety defenses to cover up the outside guys, those are the ones that are hardest. And those division teams, whether it's the Jets, we've obviously had good success against Buffalo over the years. I mean, it's always challenging games. But, Miami and the Jets, the teams that we play twice a year that know us the best, I mean, those are always, those are the tough ones. Buffalo, Miami, Jets, and, especially Miami, they've always given us fits.
Well, we appreciate the interesting talk. We hope the non-football items weren't too painful for you. You okay with that?
Oh. Yeah, guys, I appreciate it.
Excellent. We'll get back to football next week. We'll talk next Monday after the Dolphins game.
Great, guys. Take care. Thank you.